Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbor Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with The Resurrection.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried with
The Resurrection.
My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, an ice trucker, and I love films. As Prince once said, every day I feel is a blessing from God, and I consider it a new beginning. Yeah, everything is beautiful. Have you ever seen Walkabout? Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a good film. Fair play, Prince. It is a good film. Nicholas Rogue again. Good man, Prince. Good taste. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. But not this week. This week, I use my newly acquired shamanic powers to bring back a former guest from the dead and ask them 12 new questions. And this week, it's the brilliant Jen Brister's turn. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get 15 minutes extra chat and 3 extra questions, a weird secret, and the whole thing as an uncut video. All this and more over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Right, everyone, listen, there's a lot of news to get through, a bit of admin. I hope you'll all stick with this. There's a lot to talk about. We just got to get through it, okay? Firstly, if you haven't started watching yet, watch Ted Lasso on the Apple TV Plus app. The finale, written by Coach Beard himself, Brendan Hunt, is this week. Oh, it's got it all. You're going to absolutely love it. If you haven't started the show yet, you can start on Friday. Binge the lot in one go. 10 episodes. It's something else. Secondly, I will be doing a live episode of the podcast for the Unmute Festival online from the 24th of October. You can get tickets for that from the Unmute Festival website. You can watch all of that from the comfort of your own home with a live audience. Do you know what I mean? It'll be fun. And one more thing, this is for any Americans listening. The TV show that I co-created and co-wrote with William Bridges premieres Monday, October 5th on AMC. It's called Soulmate. The first episode stars Sarah Snook and Kingsley Benadire. We've spent 7 years making this show. I really hope you watch it and I really hope you love it. So that was all the admin. We got through it, didn't we? It wasn't so bad. I mean, I appreciate you probably not, you don't sort of tune into a podcast. Oh, I hope there's a lot of admin up front. But, you know, sometimes that's what happens. That's life, isn't it, in a way? But we're okay, aren't we? Anyway, here we go. Jen Brister. I mean, come off it. Jen Brister is one of the all-time great comics, one of my favourite people. It was a joy to record this over Zoom the other day. You're going to love it. She's funny, she's brilliant, she's amazing, she's a delight. Well, I mean, just, well, listen, you're about to hear it. You'll know what I mean. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 115 of Films to be Buried With. Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With,
The Resurrection.
I am joined today by a comedian, an actor, a writer, a podcaster, a presenter, a legend, a hero, a mother, a wife to me, and apparently someone else, so she says, despite the fact I've seen very little evidence of it. Please welcome to the show, my friend and yours, the amazing, the brilliant, it's Jen Brister!
Ah, Brett, I can't believe you've invited me back onto this. I feel, what a privilege, what a delight. I'm excited.
Well, there's no pressure on you, but your episode was one of my favourites. And when people say, which episode should I listen to? I say Jen Brister. And now they've got another one, lucky people.
Well, that one was recorded in Edinburgh 2018, where, you know, where you're just running from one thing to the next. And you're like, yeah. Do you want to do this podcast? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And I very sketchily prepared for it. And that's code for hadn't. And the very little notes that I had made, I didn't bring with me. I don't know if you remember. So every time you asked me a question, I went, ah, oh, can I ever think about that? You're like, not really, because we're recording.
It was a very pausey episode. It made it very dramatic. People were
very
like,
dramatic. Very difficult pauses. To edit.
Do you remember Edinburgh? Do you remember Edinburgh? Do you remember live?
Do you remember going out of the house? Remember those days? The good old days where you'd meet people in the flesh.
Do you remember live?
Vaguely. Do you remember being in a room where you could stand next to people?
And do you remember other people? Do you remember?
Do you remember the touch? Do you remember the sensation of touch?
Do you remember shaking hands? Do you remember that? That was disgusting, wasn't it?
At the very thought of that now, I mean, I don't know what we were thinking back in the old days where we used
were
to
sick.
And do that air kissing thing.
Ugh. I mean, that was bad enough, but some people used to follow through.
Oh.
Do you remember?
Yeah. Actually brush their lips against your flesh.
Absolutely disgusting. I did a Birthday Girls podcast yesterday. I highly recommend it. And they, every week, they say, your legend and dick of the week. And I was like, well, it's either me or the person I live with, isn't it? That's it. I guess with you, you've got three to choose from. Three others.
My legends were my children, which was such a loser thing to, such a loser move on my part. But that was, yeah. I think my dick of the week was Priti Patel.
Oh, that's fair. You thought you went global.
I went, yeah. She'd very much been in the, not even on my periphery. She'd just very much been in my face for that day. So I launched her.
That's fair. I probably should have done that than throw my girlfriend under the bus.
You did it with your girlfriend's dick of the week, did you?
I didn't. Jennifer Brister, well, I guess we have to ask this, but your lockdown life, I imagine, is vastly different from mine, what with the fact that you have twin boys.
Yes. And no school.
As I watched over your Instagram stories, I describe it like watching the film Castaway sped up. And gaining traction of madness, and I loved it, and I would like to put the whole thing to music. I think it would be a work of art.
I think at one point I was just talking to inanimate objects and they became my friend. The whole of lockdown was so surreal, and I think the only way I managed to get through that was knowing that everybody else was suffering. If there had been some instance where it was like, just Brighton is in lockdown and everybody else is fine, I would have literally just walked out. Yeah. Bye-bye! It was hard. But I mean, like, you know, it was hard for everybody, wasn't it? It was tricky for everyone for different reasons. Even if, you know, it was tricky for me because I didn't get any alone time. And it was tricky for some people who were like, I would really like some company around now. Yeah. I am very tired of my own company. My brother was literally on his own for 6 months.
Nice.
And bless him. So,
what's he like now? Is he different? Is he strange?
Oh, he's an empty shell of a man. No, I think he basically said to me, he's moving out of his flat. I've got to get a 2-bedroom flat. He said, I'll pay more. I'll do anything just so I have another room to walk around. Because he was working from home. He was like, I'm basically working, living, you know, watching television. He said, all in the same room. And he said, it was just like being in prison. So he's literally moving house of flat just so he can have, because he's anticipating the next lockdown. So that when he is going batshit, he can do it in more than one room, which I think fair play to you.
I think that's brilliant. What I also like is that he didn't think I'll get 2 bedrooms and get another person in that bedroom so I have another human being. He just wanted a bigger space to walk around on his own.
He just wanted a bit more space.
Yeah.
He's a classic Brister. He doesn't do well in company. So it's better that he's on his own.
I respect that. How was being a teacher? I mean, are you know, tell me this, because when people tell me, genuinely, my answer, when people say, oh, stand up, it's so brave, and I always go, oh, shut up. People go, oh, I'd be so scared. I said, that must be hard. I always think being a teacher, in my head, is like being a stand-up for 8 hours a day with a very heckly nightmarish crowd that you're trying to get to pay attention and
yeah.
have to entertain them. Like, how did you find, as a stand-up, being a teacher to two fellas?
5-year-olds. I didn't take to it very well. I learned very quickly that my children don't respect me, which was quite shocking, actually. There were occasions where they would be distracted by a plastic cup and they weren't, and I was singing and dancing and doing everything I could to distract them. And then they just look at plastic cup and go, this plastic cup is yellow, Mama. And I'm like, I'm trying to teach you phonics, you know. It was really hard. And there were days where I'd wake up in the morning, I'd go, really, come on, Jen, today's the day that we Dead Poets Society the shit out of this. They're going to really connect with you. We're going to be having, they're going to be like, Mama, when you teach, we learn so much. And every day was like, I want to do a poo. I'm hungry. I hate homeschool. When can I play? Can I watch some telly? I need a snack. Mama, will you hold my hand while I do a poo-poo? I need a wee. I'm going to be sick. And it was like, oh, God, I literally want to kill myself.
But it was lovely to be together and have that time as a family.
Really lovely. Look, jokes aside, it was honestly, truthfully, it was on one level, it was lovely because as a stand-up comedian, I'm away a lot and I was in the middle of my tour when the whole thing sort of fell apart and I was going to be away for between February and May. That was all booked up. I was away for most of it. And if you go away a lot, your children, it's not that they don't love you, but they do sort of become slightly indifferent to you. You're like, you're there, you're not there. They're kind of used to you going away. So they know not to rely on you and they know not to sort of invest too much. And so they were gradually heading towards, you know, that indifference. But the lockdown has meant that we are, you know, I'm back in the room.
Right.
I'm back in the room as far as my kids are concerned.
So now they rely on you and have, I mean, this sounds like a disastrous move.
I know. The great thing about being, I mean, you know, for any couple where one of them goes out to work and then they come home and go, I'm so tired and you don't understand how tired I am. Deep down, they know that they've got it.
That they've got it better.
They know that, for you sure. know. So I would come back and go, oh, well, I'm tired because I've been, but deep down I knew Chloe was in the shit. So on the one hand, I'm quite glad that I got to hang out with them. But on the other hand, it's reminded me that being with your children all the time is actual work. And my job is a piece of piss compared to what I've had to do for the last 6 months.
100%.
It's been so hard. So I'm really glad that they're at school. And even if we go back into lockdown, I'm still dropping them off there. So they'll just have to they'll have to entertain themselves somehow, I don't know. Just wait out there and I'll pick you up at 3, okay? All right then, bye!
Here's a plastic cup. Enjoy.
Enjoy this, it distracted you last time. So that's what I'm going to be doing. But look, they're in school now and I do feel more human. I do feel much more human.
Yeah.
Like I've got a personality and a life again. And that I'm a real person because I started... Yes. Forget
you
who
are
I
a real. You are a real person.
Is that do I look like a real person?
I can
person?
See you.
Yeah.
You sort of. You have the vague aura of a human.
Why does your head look smaller and my head look bigger?
Because I'm a real human. You're an avatar. You're an approximation of what you think a human would look like, and you're trying to pull it off. You're doing very well.
So I've failed at that quite dramatically. No. I've really got the perspective wrong. My head is way too big and yours is the perfect pinhead size.
My head is actually, in real life, massive and I can't wear a hat. One of the reasons I worry about being a film director is because, I you know, you have to wear a cap and I'm not sure I could get one on.
You can always get it. You know, they've got those buttons at the back so that, you know, have you ever tried to...
Yeah, but have you ever looked at someone with one, you know, the last button done up?
Do you know, I've seen people and they're like, I can't even do the fucking thing up at the back. So it's just, and it's flapping free.
Oh,
and
really?
Do you know what? Those guys embrace it. You know, the ones that have got they've almost got like a rectangle, sort of like their back of the head has a right angle. And you know,
rolls, hot dog rolls
and on their back of their, not even on their neck, on their actual head. I really appreciate a man that's got head fat because I think you've got to work hard for that.
You've got to have really filled up the rest of you. The head goes, all right, I'll take some.
I'll take some of that for you. Yeah, and usually they're like, it's sometimes I'm like, it's not even that you're like fat. It's just that you're just.
I think it's a choice. I think it's you have a word with yourself and go, let's put it in the head.
I think there are some guys, you know, when they go to the gym and they take steroids. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know they're taking steroids and they're like, what part of your body do you really want to work on? And they go, I want to work on my pecs, I want to work on my shoulders, I want to work on my biceps, my triceps. Yeah, this is what I'm looking at. I think there are some men that go, you know that bit at the back of my head? I'd really love to get a little ab up there. Some sort of muscle. I think that's what they're doing.
Because you can have a three-pack on your head, can't you?
You can. You can. So there are men going for a six-pack, understandably, and there are some men going three-pack back of the head, mate. And you're like, three-pack fair play to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. You've made me want to take steroids.
Here's a protein shake. Good luck.
Just inject that in your neck.
Just inject that straight into your neck.
Jennifer Brister, one more question I want to ask you before. I want to ask if you've actually done, because I think you have you done a human being gig?
I've done quite a few human being gigs. I've done human being gigs. I've done gigs in car parks. I've done Zoom gigs. I've done garden, rooftop. I've done them all. I haven't done an inside gig yet, but lots of outside gigs.
Well, so I didn't do a car park gig. I saw videos of the car park gig, and I would describe it as the bleakest looking thing I've ever seen.
It's quite dystopian.
Stand up to windscreens in the rain as well, what I saw. I just saw someone, windscreen wipers, shouting into a void of...
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever
honking.
Tried... Yeah, just a load of people in a Ford Focus. You're like, this is bleak, mate. I don't want to do this. And I did one gig where that was in a residential area, so they weren't allowed to honk their horns. I said, listen, mate, you want me to do a gig in front of a load of parked cars? Because for anyone listening...
With the windows up.
Yeah, for anyone listening going, I don't know what you're talking about. Basically, if you do a gig in a car park with people in their cars, the only way they can let you know if they're enjoying it, obviously, because they're in their car, is to honk their horn. And I was told that they weren't allowed to honk their horn, but instead, the promoter had given them these plastic clackers. Do you know these ones?
Little hands.
Yeah, so they clack them together like clacker, clacker, clacker. She said, so if they're enjoying the show, they'll wind down the window and they'll clacker, clacker, clacker. And I was like, oh my God, to kill me now. And no word of a lie, I don't know if you've heard these clacker things, but before I got introduced on stage, if you can't see what's happening, it just sounds like this. Just sounds like 200 men vigorously wanking in a car park. Mm-hmm. And that was quite triggering for me, actually, as a lesbian. So I genuinely...
Also, I don't want to say this, but there's sort of no way of proving that wasn't what was going on.
Because they were in their car.
Sorry. There's no way. I can't prove it.
Brett, why would you say that to me?
Because you've just told me a story of 200 men in a car park.
I know, but that's because
supposedly
of the
supposedly they all had clackers. just doesn't add up.
So grim. Anyway, it doesn't really look like anything's going to change too much in the near future. Mm. So that could be the future of comedy. Just us in car parks.
Just men wanking at us from cars. Oh. Jennifer Brister. You have been resurrected. Do, 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 do.
Oh, this is incredible because I did actually die.
You died. Welcome
with all these
back
films. Okay, I'm
to
back.
Earth. But what point in your life would you like to come back to? Would you change anything?
Oh,
any
my God.
Regrets?
There's like a million regrets. Could I come back to the beginning of my stand-up career, just start it again? Because there's a lot of things I wouldn't do the same way. Oh, my days. I would change a few things. Let me tell you. Oh,
you would cut I would... out all the learning bit and just go straight to being a massive success.
Oh, God. I would cut out at least 10 years and go, listen, you didn't need to do all of that shit. What were you doing there? Why were you doing sketch comedy? For fuck's sake, just stick with the stand-up.
What was your sketch show? What was your sketch
show? I was working with a friend of mine who certainly was, she doesn't do it anymore, a brilliant writer, actor, comedian, just all round funny woman, Claire Ward. And we did, and she was just genuinely better at me at the sketch than, she was just better at me. Better at me? She was better
I like
at
that.
Me.
That was called Better at Me.
That was the name of our sketch group.
Yeah.
she was better than me. And I was always better at just doing stand up and just chat and improvising and that sort of thing. That was my sort of thing. But Claire was really good at the actual sketch comedy and writing sketches and coming up with original ideas. And that was her thing. And yeah, so we did that for a few years and I just was never very good at it. And I don't know why.
What was it called?
Well, we were in a sketch group originally called The Loose Connection, and then we just did stuff together as Jen and Claire and Jen, but we were never really called Claire and Jen. What we'd do is we were just Claire Ward and Jen Barista, and we'd come on as two performers and then just do our sketches.
Right.
And we did take a show in 2008 called Reception. But I mean, not that I regret doing all of that. There's a lot of stuff, but I would have spent a lot more time focusing on my stand-up and a lot less time pretending to be, I don't know, Gokwan.
Here's the thing, though, Jen Brister, if you think it through, if you go back to what year is this, 2008?
I would go back as far as 2004.
Okay, so it's 2004. You've come back. You're as good at stand-up as you are now, but you started. So you go into a new act competition. You're fucking, everyone's like, what the fuck is this? And you smash it up. Basically, within a year, you've got your own BBC One Saturday show. Where you're like helping other stand-ups or whatever, and your life is very different. You're playing the O2 within 4 years. You're a big TV star. You probably lose your way a bit ego-wise. You become some sort of psychopath. Probably don't have the kids you have because you've got no empathy.
Everything you're saying is probably true, actually.
Yeah.
If I was to go back to 2004, I would be happily go back to 2004 being a shit comedian, but I probably would waste a lot less time with self-doubt and imposter syndrome. I would try to get rid of all of that. That's what I would try to get rid of and accelerate straight through to, you can do this, Brister, believe in yourself. That took 15 years, and I think that's too long. I'd like to just reduce that to a half. Is that okay? I see young people doing it in like, I'm an open micer. Oh, in 3 years, I've got my own show on BBC, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, how did you do that? It just took me forever. Yeah, I really resent my personality and my general, I just resent me. I wish I could have sorted all of that crap out sooner. Do you know what I mean?
I do know exactly what you mean, and not that I don't like your personality or... I get it. What I mean is, I relate.
I totally. Can totally relate, yeah.
And you see...
You are rebellion.
This all adds up.
This is making so much sense. There was something about you that I just wasn't really connected.
And then I was like, it's your personality.
It's actually you.
No, I do totally get that. And I think the reason that newer acts are better, I hope, why the standards suddenly seem so much better, I think is because they've seen a lot more, because you see so much more comedy now. There's all the YouTubes, all the specials, all the everything. You have so
there's
much more
women
access.
Doing it, yeah. There's a lot more women doing it. And if you started doing stand-up like I did like 18 years ago, there was like two or three women that you could go, oh, I want to be like you. And they were like unicorns. Do you know what I mean? It just seemed so difficult to be able to get to that standard and get to where they were that it seemed impossible. But yeah, I think hopefully now if women want to do comedy, they can see that it's totally possible. I mean, it's a miserable life, but it is totally possible.
Absolutely not recommended. But if you have kids, it's a great excuse to get out of the house.
Yep,
you can go on tour, you can go far away.
Squeeze a couple of kids out first and then you've got a reason to leave the house.
Yeah, love it. Now, Jennifer Brister, when you were brought back to life, which just happened, but in 2004, the living, they're fucking excited to see you, particularly because you've just joined the open mic circuit and you're phenomenal.
I am really good at it.
But they want to ask about films. Which you've had a lot of training because you've been in Heaven where they're obsessed.
Oh, right. And so they want to know about films in the future as well as in the past. Yeah,
as well as in Heaven. It's a very filmy universe. First question they ask is, what was the last film you saw, Jen Brister?
The last film I saw was not that long ago. It was a few weeks ago. It was The Peanut Butter Falcon.
Love that film.
Oh, you've seen it. Why am I even asking you? I think you just go on every platform and hoover up any film that's ever been made. Of course you do. I love that film.
It's great,
I
right?
wasn't expecting to love it. Chloe chose it. I like quite a bleak outlook on that film.
Right.
So anything that looks like it might be upbeat, I'm like, I don't think I want to watch that. That looks like it would cheer me up. I don't want that.
No, that's very off-brand for you.
It's not. Yeah, exactly. It's very off-brand for me, and I loved it. And I've been recommending it to everybody. And anyone listening to this, you can watch it. If you have Netflix, you can watch it on there. That's where you can find it. Is that not where you saw it? Where did you see it?
I think I saw it. I think I paid for it from, I rented it online, but I'm glad. But this was when it first came out. So if it's now on Netflix, that's great.
It is on Netflix. And do you know someone told me that there was a story behind it, like the guys that created it, that wrote it for the chap, the young chap that's in it, who is Zach Gottsagen. I can't pronounce his name. A young man with Down syndrome, a young actor with Down syndrome, and they wrote it for him because I think they'd all worked together or they'd all trained together, and he had been a child actor and he sort of went off the rails, started drinking and had a bit of a terrible time, and they wanted to write something for him to get him back on track, and so they wrote the Peanut Butter Falcon for him as a vehicle for him, which I thought was such a lovely story. But the whole movie I loved, and it is a bit, saccharine, but not in a kind of mawkish. I didn't find it to be, diabetic inducing sweet. I just thought it was. I just thought they got the balance really, really, spot on.
Have you seen Queen and Slim?
I haven't. So I'm going to listen.
Put it down.
I'm going to note. Look, I've got notebook and everything. Yeah. Look,
right, we're here for work, Jen. This isn't all a laugh. Sometimes I'm giving you.
I've got taking notes. This is it.
Queen and Slim, which is very different in many ways, but as the same sort of. There's something about it that reminded me of Peanut Butter Falcon, in that there's a kind of the way it's shot and the kind of tone of it, slightly. I don't know what the word is. Fable, like a fable. It's not quite real life consequences
exactly,
and.
Yeah, it's not. Entirely naturalistic.
No.
It's got a story to tell. And a fable is the perfect way of describing the Peanut Butter Falcon, because there are points in it like his super strength and the bit where he's being, what's the name of the actor that's in it?
Shia LaBeouf,
yeah? He's brilliant in it. He's absolutely amazing in it, where he's pulling him out of the water on the rope. You know, there's bits in it where you're like, okay, it stretches naturalism a little bit, but the actual story has a moral to it. And, and that's why I really enjoyed it, I suppose. And the acting was great. And the connection between the actors, I thought was really sweet as well. Between Shia LaBeouf and Zach was lovely. It was really.
God, I'm glad we brought you back to life. That's a lovely answer.
You're welcome.
Jim Brister, who do you think should play you in the film of your life?
I think. And only because when this, I don't know if you guys, there's only you there. I don't know if you remember this, Brett, The Whale Rider. Of course you do. Yeah, New Zealand film, New Zealand. The Whale Rider. Well, the young girl that played
Oscar,
The Whale Oscar Rider.
Oscar nominee.
Oscar, Keisha Castle Hughes. Mm-hmm. When that film came out, everyone went, oh my God, if there was a film of your life, she would play you as a child. And I was like, well, okay. So I'm going to say Keisha Castle Hughes, because I cannot think of another actor that could play.
Right, so Keisha Castle Hughes
would play me.
Goes on the open mic circuit 2004. I love it. I love this film. I will watch this film. It's a fable.
It's so many layers to this. So she would play me on the open mic circuit, definitely. Mm. And you'd see her gradual, very gradual, incremental, actual glacial rise to middle success.
It's a story about not giving up. Never, ever.
It's a story that there's no, there's no happy ending, but there's a bit where you go, well, she didn't kill herself and she seems like she's okay. She's not overeating anymore and she looks like she's back on track. Yeah, fine. She's dealt with a unibrow. Okay, great. She looks.
It's a powerful piece.
Yeah. I think that I think she would be great. I think she'd capture the, because there's a lot of layers to this story. Yeah. And I think she'd pick up my vibe. Both of us are quite beige. Also, when I was in New Zealand many, many years ago, I kept being asked by Maori people if I was Maori. So they were asking me that all the time. I said,
and in
Maori,
the film, that will be less awkward, that moment, because she would be like, yeah.
Yeah, I am actually. But so, hang on a second, you're supposed to be half Spanish. Sure, whatever.
It's a complex piece.
It's a complex piece. There's a Venn diagram there, and she's somewhere in the middle. There's Maori, there's Spanish, there's English, there she is. She's bang in the middle. She can handle it. And also, you know, you'd need somebody that could carry the weight of this heavy lesbian personality, and I think she could do it perfectly.
Do you have the personality of a heavy lesbian?
I think so. I think there's, you know, there's light lesbians and there's heavy ones. I feel like my personality is definitely on the heavier side.
On the heavy spectrum?
Yeah. I don't think enough is said about the light and heavy spectrum, actually, when it comes to personalities. No. Where would you sit yourself? I think you're quite in the middle. I think you give off light personality, but I think there's a dark side to you, Brett, which we haven't tapped into yet. Mm. Would you agree? Sometimes there's a furrowed brow, and I think, what's going on under those eyebrows?
Yeah. We're basically, as soon as the podcast ends, it all comes out. But this is why I have to keep the podcast to a certain length of time, because I can only maintain this decor.
You can only keep it together for this amount of time. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's
what's the film of your life called? Starring Keisha Castle Hughes?
Middle of the Road.
Love it.
Yeah.
What is the most romantic film you've ever seen? I've never seen you look so panicked.
That wasn't in my preparation. You just spoke that on me. Look, listen, I'm very good at improv. It was okay.
Really good.
Yeah.
Really good. It makes sense. The whole thing makes sense. Except that in the end you realise not middle, you're heavy.
Oh, God. Yeah, but that's about weight.
But that's the message. Not weight. Personality. Heavy lesbian personality.
Yeah. I'm a heavyweight personality lesbian that's only travelled to the middle. I don't know. Let's not break it down too much. It was all the... Too many spoilers.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval, variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49%. Based on credit worthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
What's the most romantic film you've ever seen, Jen Bristow? May I say something? I think you pretend not to be a romantic person, and I think you are.
I am a sucker for a romantic film, but it has to be... It's. I think with romantic films, it's all about when you see it as well. So you can see it at a time where you're like, oh, this is just bullshit. Well, I'm not really into this. And then there's another time that you might see that exact same film and it just captures a moment in your life where you're feeling like either you really want to be in a relationship or you've just come out of one and you're feeling a bit vulnerable or whatever it is. And Before Sunrise is one of those films that I saw, I must have been quite young. It must have been in my 20s. And I saw it and I sort of wasn't expecting to love it as much as I did. And I think I watched it with my brother, Greg, and neither of us, certainly to each other, would be talking about romantic films. And we were always into action films and sci-fi films and stuff like that. And both of us just fell in love with it. And then we've since watched the trilogy of the movies, and I know that every time we've seen it, we haven't seen the other two together, we've ended up talking about it as if, you know, like as if we know this couple. and I think that's why I love that film also, because if you watch the whole trilogy of films, you see, because ordinarily that would be the end of their story.
Yeah.
And you know, you think, oh, how romantic, but that is inevitably when a couple get together, that's the beginning of your story. And I loved all of them. I loved all of the films. And I love Julie Delpy in particular. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah. I think that's great. The third film is quite incredible. It's so dark and like it's such a hardcore.
It's not when you compare it to. It's Before Sunset is the last one, isn't
before
it?
Before Midnight is the last
oh, one. Before Midnight. Before Sunset is the second one, and Before yeah. Midnight, that's it. Well, yeah, Before Midnight is kind of the antithesis of the first one, really, in yeah. some ways.
But it's like, this is real. This is marriage. This is.
But this is. This is long-term this is relationships. Kids. Yeah, this is what it does to you. You have to keep reinventing. You have to accept, in a long-term relationship, you have to accept that you are going to get bored of the person, that they're going to get bored of you, that you are going to have times where you stop finding them attractive. There are times that they very much find you unattractive, and that you don't necessarily, you might stop and think, oh, is this it?
Like is I say, it? You're romantic.
But I like that that film was like, it yeah. was kind of like, they got to that point where they were like, oh, Jesus Christ, is this it for me for the rest? Yeah. You know, and also I think a lot of Hollywood movies always try, they shy away from the reality of what long-term relationships are. And also, like, if you stick around often, if you do work through all of that, then you come out the other end and you're even stronger and better for it. But that first film, because it's the beginning, and the beginning is where all the romance is, and often or that excitement that you can't ever recreate until you hit into another relationship. And I was single at the time, and I just remember thinking it just looked a wonderful thing to be in love.
your experience of long-term life and all the things you just said, do you think it's just a cycle? You feel those things and then it goes back up again, or is it just a steady decline?
I think you have to, oh God, it's like therapy, isn't it? I think you have to be really proactive and motivated, and you have to want it, and you have to work at it, and you have to, and if you don't, then it will end. And that's why I'm all for the things like couples therapy and, you know, because the thing that is the hardest part of keep going in a relationship is communication, because all those resentments start to build up and then you don't communicate them and then you can't see a way of getting past them. And then that affects every aspect of your relationship. So I think anyone that's in a long term, you know, and I'm talking like 15 years plus, will know that you have to really try. You have to want it. And I think having kids makes you go, well, we can't just, you know, sack this shit off. We need to talk about it. Mm. So, but equally, sometimes you can't get past it. And that's why there's a bazillion divorces, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and equally, I sometimes think relationships come to a natural conclusion. And it doesn't mean that they failed. It just means that they've come to an end. And that's also what happens sometimes. But that trilogy is just so brilliant, and if people haven't seen it, I would highly recommend it.
So, Jen,
yes, Brett.
What is the best film you ever saw that you never want to see again?
I think any sad film. I can't watch sad films more than once. So anything like Schindler's List.
So you like a bleak film, but not a sad film. Is there a difference for you?
Well, a bleak film is sort of dystopian, often kind of futuristic. Or horror, you know, or, you know, it's like some sort of dark sci-fi thing. Okay. Or, you know, like The Walking Dead or something like that. Right. Do you know what I mean? But something where there's a real story to it, particularly if it is in any way connected to real life, like Schindler's List, that's a one-time thing for me. I don't need to see that again. I don't need to see, you know, 12 Years a Slave again. I don't need to see... That's a one and done, isn't it? I don't need to see I don't even need to see Brokeback Mountain again. I remember seeing Brokeback Mountain. I loved it. I thought it was beautifully shot. I thought the acting was outstanding. And it completely killed me. I was at the end of the film. I was broken. Brokeback Mountain broke me.
You were broke
back. I was broken-backed mountained. Okay. So, yeah, I don't think I'll ever watch that film again. I've never seen Schindler's List again. So, those...
I'd say that's fair. You don't want to put that on a loop at a party.
No, and that's not the one that you have at your 40th, is it? Hey, let's put Brokeback Mountain on! And all of those Manchester by the Sea, you don't need to see these films again. So I appreciate them at the time that I watched them. I think they're brilliant. I always think the acting is phenomenal. But one time on it. Thank you very much.
I think that totally makes sense. May I say, I think we didn't make enough of what an amazing answer you gave previously about romantic film and your life. I really appreciate it. Now, next question, Jennifer Brister.
I love that this is the most seamless podcast. Do you know what I mean? I love all the segues. They go really well into one another. So natural. And at no point is there any change. The clutch isn't working.
Now, this one, I think, is big for you.
Is it?
The best action film you've ever seen. I know. You've seen an awful lot of action films.
I love an action film. Yeah. God, I my taste in films is basically a 16-year-old boy. That's I suppose, when you say action, can I include, like, sci-fi films in it?
If they're action-y.
Okay, all right, Aliens.
That is definitely an action film.
Yeah, that is
brilliant answer.
That is probably the best action film in the world.
That's a brilliant answer.
Aliens, not Alien, but Aliens.
She's not fucking around with Alien, all right?
I love Alien. I love Aliens.
It's a great
I just
film.
Thought, in terms of action, it was Bill Paxton in that. Come on,
Bill. What are you doing?
What an absolute doof. But he was brilliant in it. And Sigourney Weaver, obviously, is amazing in it. And it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And there's everything you want in an action film. There's a baddie, that guy from My Two Dads.
Oh, okay, yes.
My Two Dads is in it.
One of the My Two Dads,
not the one with the mullet, the other one. In fact, they both got mullets, but the shorter one.
The Mad About You My Two Dads.
Yeah. So he's the baddie in it. He's great. You think he's quite benign, but then he turns out to be an absolute bastard. There's a ginger cat. Who doesn't like a cat? Mm-hmm. There's a little girl that gets saved. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Doesn't make it very far, though, does she?
There's a little Hispanic lesbian.
Yeah.
Who's maybe not a lesbian, but she needs to tell her hair cut that. There's Bill Paxton. Mm-hmm. There's the other handsome chap whose name I never know, who is in it as well. You know, the one, what's his name? There's loads of action in it. And also there's aliens in it, and they're awful. Awful people.
And they mean.
They're so, and I don't.
What do they mean, the aliens?
Also, it's bad enough that you've got two mouths. I mean, that's greedy. Mm. But acid for blood? Come on.
So where's all this slime coming from the whole time? It's
the
really
whole time. Slathering
in it. Just have a fucking wash.
I know. And also, it's like, God, it's just dreadful table manners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the main thing I often think. Is like, what? Like, you never towel off?
No. But if they did, because of all the slime, you'd get all those little towel balls, wouldn't you? It'd
be a very gritty towel after.
Yeah, it would be.
Jen Brister, of all the films, if you had to, and you could, which film do you think you could have made and why?
Well, I used to think I could make something as brilliant as Abigail's Party. Now, look, I couldn't.
Good answer.
I could not.
You could. I believe in you.
Abigail's Party, I was obsessed with for quite a long time. I remember when I saw it, I thought, if I could make a film like this or a play, that was a brief obsession of mine, was trying to write something. And I ended up writing something that was basically Abigail's Party.
So you could make it.
Yeah, I could. I could make a really shit version of Mike Leigh's Abigail's Party. That would probably be, if I was going to write a film script, that would be the closest thing I could imagine myself writing towards. Yeah, something like that.
I believe it. I've just remembered that I saw you in Trevor Locke's play in Edinburgh, where you were the perfect
place. The one and the many, yeah. I don't know what I did. I played a few parts.
Jen Brister, what film have you pretended to like to impress people?
Le Quatre Cent Coup by François Truffaut. I studied
very good
New Wave French cinema at A level, so I had to watch a lot of François Truffaut's films, and Le Quatre Cent Coups was one of the films I had to write like a 5,000-word essay on. Dear God. And I didn't really, I think I watched it when I was like 16, and so I didn't really get it. I didn't really enjoy it. And then I remember, like, I don't know, 15 years later, being at some sort of boring dinner party or something and someone talking about Truffaut. And I stupidly went, and I can't really remember anything of it. You know, this is 15 years later. And they were like going, oh, I love New Wave French cinema. And I went, oh, I studied Truffaut at, and then that was it. We went deep and I had nothing. I had a very superficial remembering of any of his movies and really struggled through that. And I had to pretend I loved Le Quatre Cent Coups when I remember watching it being bored out of my mind. So I think if I watched it now, I'd enjoy it a lot more, but I don't remember loving it.
Do you think they knew? Do you think you got away with it?
They didn't know. They didn't know, no.
Well done.
It was a very uncomfortable conversation, but I think they went away. Also, I did that a lot of that thing. I was like, "What did you? How did you feel about blah blah blah?" You know, I did a lot of question asking, and very then that triggered some memories, which meant I could blag it. So I looked like I was a complete philistine, which I am.
That's very good, Tim Brister.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, go on. What?
I was just wondering. Is that? Have you ever got into any of that new wave?
But do I like any of it? I mean.
I
think I'd be at that dinner party with you going, yeah, absolutely.
And then you're like, do you know what? Take it or leave it, mate.
Come on.
Have you seen Aliens?
Jen Brister, what is a film that you've never seen that you think it's mad you've never seen it?
Quadrophenia.
That is mad. Jen Brister, what is the film you love that you don't expect anyone else to like?
The Lord of the Rings.
You've come to the right place.
The Lord of the Rings. It's just Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings.
You're talking to the right person to, because...
You hate it.
Listen, I admire it and respect the time management that it must have taken to make it. It's a huge achievement. It's huge. I can't criticise it. All I can say is it's not for me.
No.
The story of things walking along for 12 hours. One thing in another thing.
I don't know anyone that likes that film.
Right.
The amount of times I've said, I can't remember. There was a point in my life, I haven't watched it for many years now, but there was a point in my life where I would just get down and every year I had it on a box set. I'd go, I know what I'll do. I'll watch Lord of the Rings. I'd sit and watch all three films, like 12-hour marathon or whatever it is. Not that long, but, you know, ridiculous amount of time. And then I let that out once. I let that cat out of the bag. I know to keep that cat well in the bag, by the way, now.
Yeah,
and people looked at me like I'd literally like shat in my hand and thrown it in their face. They were like, what are you watching Lord of the Rings for? Are you 11? Why are you watching that?
What, a load of hobbits with the, oh, I'm a small person with furry feet. It's gone for a long walk.
Oh, I'm a wizard. I'm an orc. Actually, it's really racist. Why are the orcs black? Have you even thought about that? Oh, check your privilege. And I'm like, do you know what? I hadn't really... Just thought it was like a fantasy. It was escapism, and you've really ruined it for me now. So I do appreciate it's not for everyone.
That's really, really good of you. And you, the thing is, you're going to dinner party with people who like fucking Francois Truffaut. So
why would you bring up Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, that's not going to. Then I mean,
keep that shit.
I'm glad you like it. Listen, I think it's a popular trilogy.
Well. The only other person I know that enjoys it is Kerry Godleyman's husband, and that's what we bond on, the fact that we both like
Lord of the Rings. Love him even more.
Yeah, he hates it. I mean, she hates it. Yeah. Don't tell Kerry, she won't enjoy it.
No. Well, it is really boring. What is the what is the film you would show a lover as a test to see if you should be together? Basically, what's a deal breaker? If they didn't like it, you're like, forget it.
Well, nothing really, because we've
come on, grow up.
I've just established that I like Lord of the Rings, for God's sakes. If I have any deal breakers, I'm going to be single till the day I die. I suppose another Mike Leigh film, it would be Life is Sweet.
Great.
I've watched that film like 20 times and I never not like it. And even though now, when I first watched it, it just come out and it felt really like current and modern, and you watch it now and it's like sort of early 90s. It looks like it was a million years ago, and I just loved it. I thought it was so beautiful, and I loved the family in it. I thought it was, and I never not cry with the bit with Jane Horrocks and Alison Steadman in the bedroom. I'm just welling up thinking about it. Oh, I love it. I just love that movie. Timothy Spall. Oh, just, well, no, but seriously, I did. I really enjoyed it, and I would highly recommend people to watch that. But it is really dated now.
And you would break up with your with Chloe if she didn't like it?
I don't even know if she's seen it, actually. I've got it.
This is a high risk now.
Yeah, I had it on DVD. I did have it on DVD, and I lent it to someone, and I don't remember who I lent it to, and I never got it back. But the acting in it's brilliant. And also, it's a story, really, where nothing actually happens. Very little happens in it, but it's a story of this family and their relationships, and it's a very young Claire Skinner and a very young Jane Horrocks in it. And actually, Jim Broadbent and Alison Steadman are reasonably young in it as well. Timothy Spall. Mm. It's brilliant. It's really good.
That's lovely. Jen, what is the film that made you the most uncomfortable?
Okay. So the film that made me the most uncomfortable, I suppose, was I watched The Shining when I was probably, I don't know, 13 or 14 with a friend, and I was terrified the whole way through the film. More because I think it was the first sort of horror film that I'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to admit to my friend that I was absolutely shitting the bed the entire way, because I think she probably was as well, but she was like, you know, there was literally zero expression on her face, whereas I was like, felt like I was going to die of a heart attack the whole way through. And that was the most uncomfortable viewing, because not only was I genuinely terrified, I wasn't allowed to signal any terror, you know, show no weakness. And I, after watching it, I remember thinking, well, maybe if I watched it again, I would be less scared. And then I watched it again, I was just scared. But there was a couple of scenes that stayed out in my mind. Obviously, the red rum and him writing "All Work and No Play Makes Jack a Dull Boy." And the scene with the decomposing woman in the bathtub.
The woman in the bath is very horrible.
All of those images, yeah. And the twins, the flashing, those girls.
You've got twins. Has that affected you?
Well, mine aren't identical. So also get them to stand still next to each other for any amount of time, forget it. or quiet. Those images sort of stayed with me for decades. And ultimately with The Shining, it's probably a classic horror film, because everything's happening in your brain. It's all the suspense and the horror that is happening is what is in your imagination, rather than like some sort of porn gore, you know, like you get with Saw or...
Yeah, Saw. I hate the old porn gore.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not into that.
I don't... I'll be like, call me old-fashioned, but I don't like gore with my porn. I like it just gore-free. I know, I'm a square.
Listen, Brett, I'm with you. If I'm going to watch gore, I don't want porn with it.
I'd agree with that as well. That's fair.
I just want the gore. Take the porn out, thanks.
Yeah. Everything in its place.
Yeah. Look, people say, listen, Jen, your trouble is you compartmentalise too much. And I'm like, I think on this case it's
I think when it comes to porn and gore.
Separate boxes, please.
Separate boxes. Oh, there's some lovely looking gore over there. Put that away.
Yeah.
That's some lovely looking porn.
Some lovely looking porn there. Great. I know which one I'm going to tackle first.
Sorry, did you see that porn? It was very lovely looking, actually. That's some lovely looking porn. Thank you, the internet. If you could show a child only one film, what would it be?
Well, I'd show them any number of films, but The Muppets and probably The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Jen Risden, you have won.
Basically, The Muppet Christmas Carol, I remember I bought it for the kids last Christmas, and I put it on and I said, kids, this is a film that I used to watch when I was little and I loved it. And then I realised it was made in 1992 and I was 17. So I thought, well, hang on a second. You weren't little when you used to watch that. You were heading towards being an adult, you complete freak. So that just says a lot about me, that I watched that at 17 and loved it. But yeah, I stand by the Muppets for everything. I think they're fantastic.
Jen Brister, here's a twist for you. Watch my screen. I pretend, oh, we're doing a film podcast because I'm so vertigo. Doink.
Oh, you've got the Muppets on your wall. Where did you get that from? I want that.
I want it.
I want it.
Oh, no.
Oh, so you did enjoy Lord of the Rings, eh?
I want the posters.
Give them to me.
Look, I talk about it far too much, so I'm not going to, but let's keep it brief. Just so you know, I genuinely believe that The Muppet Christmas Carol is probably the greatest film ever made.
Oh, my God, Brett, this is why you're my husband.
Yeah.
This is how, I think, this is what our relationship is built on, is our love of The Muppets.
Yeah, I watch it at least once a year. I've seen it a lot. I've seen it, I've studied it. I've seen it, I'd say, 30 times minimum, and it's fucking... every aspect, directing, writing, acting, all the Muppets are incredible in it. Michael Caine's best performance he ever gave.
Yeah.
And the story, Christmas Carol's the greatest story ever told.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think you can beat that for a Christmas parable, can you? That is the best possible story for Christmas. And I showed it to my kids and... 15 minutes in, they were bored and walked off. But this year, I think they're going to tap into it. Really,
you know, when I asked you about the sort of deal breaker with a lover, if I had kids and I showed them Muppet Christmas Carol and they got bored, that would be a deal breaker for me, and I'd put them up for adoption.
You might have to do that. So what I would say is wait until then they have the concentration to sit in front of a TV for longer than 7 minutes. Yeah.
What age am I looking at?
Depends on the child, but with my kids, maybe 11.
Okay. Thank you for that tip. Yeah.
You're welcome.
I just think, listen, people are bored of me talking about Muppet Christmas Carol, but I got a lot more to say. Anyway.
Well, we can take this offline.
Yeah. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Jen Brister. Right. God, I've loved hanging out with you, and I want to do longer, but we can't, because you've got to go and pick up the kids from. You've left them at a school gate where there's no school on. And
well, they've got a plastic cup, Brett. We've already established that. Yeah. Why keep going on about it?
Okay, that's true. Now, I've brought you back to life, and I haven't decided. I think I'm going to let you live at least a while longer.
Thank you.
But just in case something were to happen, there's a lawyer here who'd like to know what. If you could have one DVD to leave to your loved ones in your will, what would it be?
It would have to be Muppets Christmas Carol. I have to be. I don't understand how I could go in that direction.
I might kill you again just so that your loved ones get that film. I think about it. I'm going to leave you to live for now.
Okay. That's a relief, actually, because I don't know if you've noticed, but I've just hit middle of the road and I don't want to. I don't want to go back down again. That would be
awful. Yeah, exactly.
A peach, basically.
Keisha Castle Hughes needs to shadow you a bit longer to get you.
Exactly. So she'd be very disappointed if I was to die. This is a big break for her.
Jennifer Brister, is there anything people should look out for? Is there any car parks they should be driving to? Is there anything you would like to plug?
I have my book, The Other Mother. Please read my book. It's available at all good bookshops. I have a special on Soho On Demand and Next Up called Meaningless. And, Brett, is it okay? Can I plug my podcast? Is that absolutely...
Oh, of course you can, and you should.
That I have a podcast which I do with Alison June Smith and Maureen Younger called WTB, which is an acronym for Women Talking Bollocks, which you can pick up at any, wherever you get your podcasts. So it's an Acast podcast, a bit like Brett's, and you can pick it up. You don't pick podcasts up, do you? You listen to them, but you know what I'm talking about.
If you put down your phone, you could pick it up and listen
to
the podcast.
If you put down your phone and it's on your phone, then you can pick it up.
Pick up our podcast. Jen Brister, can I say it? I love you.
I love you too. That's why we married.
Thank you for doing this again. You've been an absolute dreamboat.
Brett, it's been a bloody pleasure. This is the only time I've ever been invited back onto a podcast. This may be the only time I'll ever be invited back on. And it's been an absolute blinking treat.
And let's just say there might be a trilogy. have a wonderful life. And you I too. Will stop the recording now. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
So that was episode 115. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 15 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Jen. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating and write about the film that means the most to you and why. I do read them. They're often very moving. Sometimes they're funny. A few of them have made me cry. I really appreciate it. Reminder of all the admin. Watch Ted Lasso on Apple TV. Watch Soulmates on AMC. Get your tickets to the Unmute Podcast Festival. Blah, blah, blah. Thank you so much to Jen for doing this show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics. Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another brilliant guest. And that is about all of it. So that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you, Maureen.